This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 4th of June 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 3rd of June 2021, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are revised M3 scheme for public comment, fears for mothers, and council destroys green space affecting wildlife. So we start with the story behind the first headline. Revised M3 scheme for public comment. Highways England has unveiled revised plans for Junction 9 on the M3 at Winnall. Following a public consultation in 2019, the agency has altered the proposal after some important comments were provided. These include the length available for vehicles to change lanes when joining the A34 from Junction 9 and then heading onto the A33 Kingsworthy, the future traffic capacity and the length of construction time. The public consultation runs to July the 8th and will provide full details of the scheme, which is proving controversial, including safety fears and encouraging more traffic. Highways England Senior Project Manager John Roos said, "Our new plans for the M3 at Junction 9 will increase capacity, help reduce journey times and improve safety. We have taken feedback from the previous consultation into account and we're looking forward to showing people these new designs and talking through the improvements. I would urge anyone interested in the scheme to visit our virtual exhibition to find out more about the proposals and feedback their thoughts to us. The scheme would include widening the junction to create 4 lanes each way, a new road and roundabout design to provide free flow links between the M3 and A34 for those travelling between Newbury and Southampton. It would also see the rearranging of the main Junction 9 roundabout with a new elongated design. The scheme would incorporate 3 new bridges and a number of other structures, including an improved bridge over the River Itchen and new underpasses, along with revised walking and cycle routes and improved motorway slip roads. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, there will be no events for people to attend in person, but instead virtual ways people can get involved, speak to the project team and ask questions." MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Steve Bryan, said, "This project has been a long time in coming to even this stage, but it's no less important now to the local and national infrastructure piece than it was when first conceived. We've got to take people with us and all this done, so I hope as many as possible will take part in the consultation." Just a comment, I live in Winchester and I think all the residents in Winchester have actually had something through the post giving the details of the scheme and how to join the virtual exhibition.
Fears for mothers. The future of maternity services in Winchester has been thrown into doubt, sparking fears that mothers may have to travel further for urgent care. Plans are being developed for a new hospital in or near Basingstoke, raising concerns that it will mean long-term downgrading of services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Full maternity units, staffed by midwives and doctors, are currently available at both Florence Portal House in Winchester and Basingstoke. There's a midwifery-led birthing centre in Andover. Concerns have now been raised that consultant-led care could be removed from the unit at the Romsey Road site. The issue was raised by the NCT Winchester branch coordinator, Bryony Farrant, who has asked health chiefs how this would affect birth choices and the impact that this would have on safety. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, responded during a meeting coined Ask the NHS, organised by MP Steve Brine. She said, "There are some of our services that are smaller, and we are providing twice, so are more challenged. Maternity services and neonatal services are some of those, so we are still developing the final options. But we do have options whereby the consultant-led obstetrics would be moved to the acute centralised hospital. We do have an option where it will stay in Winchester as well. We know the number of births in Winchester and Basingstoke are under the number you would expect for the level of neonatal care, keeping services safe and up to date." Dr. Alloway continued, "I think safety is a real question here. For all options, we would still have antenatal and postnatal care on the Winchester site. The things that people need to attend multiple times, we would have as locally as possible." She added, "For safety, there are significant advantages of centralising the obstetrics-led delivery service, but recognising that we still want to have a midwife-led unit and antenatal and postnatal care in the option where we centralise in Winchester. We do have an option where we provide still, as we do now, obstetrics-led care in Winchester, as well as in a new acute hospital. And then what we will need is a neonatal unit to support it as we have now. But our neonatal units are not looking after enough babies to continue to provide the intensive care that they provide now." Bryony said, "I really take the point about safety for high-risk pregnancies, but I'm imagining that actually represents a small number of pregnancies compared to the average number of pregnancies and births. I'm wondering about those scenarios where the birth wasn't flagged as a high-risk pregnancy but suddenly becomes high-risk and requires transfer, and how that impacts not just on the safety but also on the psychological experience for the mother and father, and what that means for their experience of positive birth." Following the meeting, Mr. Bryan asked, "I'm very uncomfortable about any move away from Winchester of consultant-led maternity services. It's more important than ever for the clinicians to make their case and be totally honest with us about what we gain and what we lose."
Council destroys green space affecting wildlife. The County Council has been criticised for clearing wildflowers and scrub from green spaces in Winchester during peak bird breeding season. Last month, people were encouraged to take part in No Mow May to allow for wildflowers to bloom, providing a feast of nectar for pollinators. But residents have become frustrated after contractors, believed to be working for Hampshire County Council's Highways Department, had cut 1 acre of meadow on Monday, May the 24th. The land is next to East Winchester Park and Ride at Bar End. Liz Fouch of Highcliffe regularly walks her dog along the cycleway which runs through the meadow. She said, "It's disgusting how ignorant people can be. They have decimated this beautiful meadow at completely the wrong time of year. On Monday morning last week, it was full of birdsong and flowering cowslips, buttercups and geraniums. By Tuesday morning, all the wildlife was gone. The brambles had been destroyed and the flowers mulched into the ground. The council and contractors must have known it was the wrong time of year. It is disgraceful they didn't wait until the bird nesting season was over before controlling the scrub. There is no excuse for the works to take place at this time of year. Next year's wildlife seed source has been mulched into the ground." Liz added, "This was meadow alive with birdsong every morning. We loved seeing song thrush, blackbird, long-tailed tits and green woodpecker. On Tuesday, the meadow was silent. and I watched as a little robin looking absolutely lost. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Lead Member for Economy, Transport and the Environment at Hampshire County Council, said the overgrown meadow was posing a threat to the survival of the wildflowers that grow there. Wildflower meadows require either at least 2 grass cuts each year or regular grazing to maintain the biodiversity. In order to allow the flowering life of the cowslips to be maintained, mowing was delayed until late May. We could not leave it until later because of the orchids and other summer flowering plants, which will come through. A second cut will take place in September. Most wildflower species are perennials and will bounce back now that the coarse grasses, brambles and scrub have been removed. Doing nothing would lead to the meadow slowly reverting to scrub woodland.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Black, Andrew John Black, on the 13th of May, aged 75. Bunny, Harold James, known as Jim Bunny, in Winchester, on the 22nd of May, aged 87. Lee Can, Frederick Dennis Lee Can, at home on the 30th of April. Matthews, Brian Peter Matthews, on the 15th of May. Ralph Nigel, known as Nige Ralph, no dates are given. Spreadbury, Andrew Spreadbury, on the 22nd of May. Stratton, Daphne Stella Elsie Stratton, on the 8th of May at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 93. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week it's offered by Rosemary Baker, and she entitles it The Gnomes of Jesus. Yes, you read the title correctly. Although, in fact, this week's Christian comment is not about gnomes. So sorry to disappoint. I was discussing how I could discuss the theme of the Trinity, as this was the theme on Sunday. A combination of my teeth problems and my friend's hearing difficulties led to her hearing this when I said the names of Jesus. I was referring to the fact that the Bible uses many names for Jesus as it does for God. The word Trinity refers to the concept that Christians use to describe our God, who is a three in one. This is difficult both to understand and to explain, as there are no explicit Bible references to this particular understanding of God as three persons. The word used in the Creed is personas, like the mask Greek actors wear to play different characters. It's always the same person behind the three personas. The idea that God was in fact three people came out of studying the Bible and identifying three pictures of how he behaved. The Greek actor is a really good illustration. If we look at God as having three roles rather than three people, in the sense that we understand a person with a physical body, many of us have more than one role. We can be a daughter or a son at the same time as being a wife or husband, and yet also mother or father. In my favourite Call the Midwife TV programme, Violet Buckle is Fred's wife, the proprietor of a shop, and also a local councillor. She only wants this latter role on Thursday evenings when she holds her surgery, and is horrified to be confronted with a dead rat while serving customers in her shop. Acquiring new roles has been common during the various lockdowns we've been experiencing. Parents have become teachers. Some have tried to cut hair or toenails, and even to repair lost fillings. So God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. These are the personas he shows in loving us as Father, saving us as Jesus, and in creation as the Holy Spirit. So what about the names of Jesus? There are over 50 different names or titles referring to Jesus in the Bible. but it is perhaps in the different roles that he does and can play in our lives that can help us all to have a more personal and meaningful relationship with him, and through him, with God. Many of our well-known hymns describe these roles and what Jesus can mean to us. For example, "How sweet the name of Jesus sounds" uses the roles of shepherd, guardian and friend, among others. So, apologies about the gnomes.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have the first now of three letters about the North Walls Park. The first one is from CJ Ashcroft and is entitled "North Walls Park, If It Ain't Broke." "Sir, I fully support the letters in last week's Chronicle highlighting the Council's potentially misguided approach to the future of North Walls Park, especially the letter from Sir Anthony Walker, who provides a well-informed and pragmatic response to the key issues raised in the consultation brief. I would simply add that the park is, and has been for the 35 years that I have used it, a very attractive and much appreciated space, meeting many recreational needs in its present form. Yes, the new pavilion would be a valuable asset, and a few extra benches, a refreshed kiddies play area and some toilets would be good. But other improvements, such as sculpture towers and concrete solar trees, really. I think it just proves that the consultants have failed to appreciate the existing quality of the park and totally misunderstood why it is so valued by local people. I'm also a little surprised that our perpetually cash-strapped City Council even wants to consider embarking on this project at this particular time, especially after funding most of the new leisure centre. Perhaps it would be more advisable to sort out the future of the River Park building first, because finding an acceptable solution to that tricky problem may have significant cost implications of its own. Finally, rather than be swayed by pages of consult speak, may I suggest that the council considers the merits of a good old saying that could serve it well in this case: if it ain't broke, don't fix it." And that letter was from CJ Ashcroft, Main Road, Martyr Worthy.
And the next letter is from Judith Martin, and it's entitled "River Park." "Sir, after the slowest election count in the country, Winchester has a new city council. Except that it doesn't really. The changes are minor. The lead party is still in charge, and of course the officers are mostly still there. I'm told some of the newcomers are good. Certainly there are some impressive CVs, although I know how difficult it is first to get one's head around the Byzantine processes and then to make any actual impact against the entrenched attitudes. Even before the new members were sworn in, yet another consultation on North Walls River Park has been launched. Without actually mentioning the white elephant in the park, the about-to-be-redundant leisure centre. Nor does it mention the indoor bowl structure, which could as well be on an industrial park. Its windowless expanse is a blight on a sensitive site, but it is allowed to stay, and the consultation proceeds by ignoring it, just as it turns its back on the river and the trees. This consultation follows an earlier one which reported in 2019, and a small-scale COVID-era one last September, which also avoided mentioning the two buildings. Many of the remarks made during that most recent session were sensible, such as noting that Winchester used to have several freshwater lidos. Or lidos, whichever you like to say. Another consultee said, "The park has an informal character. Care should be taken not to spoil this by adding flashy things." People made modest requests like seating. So, naturally, the new consultation proposes inspiring artworks and a grand archway or totem feature to celebrate arrival. One of the best responses to last year's consultation was, "The park is not broken, so why fix it?" In fact, the Save the Wreck campaign of 2013 could be said to have succeeded for once, as the open green space is still not built on. Will the campaigners mobilise again to prevent the grand archway? Surely the latest plans will trigger more dismay. The trouble with all us letter writers is that we don't charge enough. If only we charged the amounts Winchester City Council pays to its myriad smart firms, perhaps we would be listened to. And that was from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
And a third letter concerning North Walls Park. "Sir, I fully agree with last week's letter writers on the subject of North Walls Park. Chronicle Letters, May the 27th. Of course, there are questions about the River Park Recreation Centre site and the support needed for the sports grounds. But the park itself does not need gimmicks. If city councillors want to see what can be achieved without grandiose attractions, they should visit Romsey's Memorial Park. That is a huge success, with only a simple cafe, kiosks, public toilets and some ducks." This from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue in Winchester.
Continuing with planning issues, we move on to the perennial of Silver Hill. And this is from Terry Gould. "Sir, the silver in Silver Hill is by now very tarnished through lack of council activity. Despite having a valid, well-thought-out proposal for developing King's Walk, nothing is happening. The council has employed Jones Lang to advise and move along Silver Hill and other developments. Why are they not considering the proposal by Kim Gottlieb and others to make a real beginning in the development of the area? Why do the consultants, so I understand, believe that the SDP is not viable and that archaeology isn't a real consideration? I'm not sure what the initials SDP stand for. I suspect Strategic Development Plan. A lot of us ratepayers put in considerable time and effort with the excellent JTP public participation exercise that led to the SDP being adopted. Adopted and thus a legal document of the council. After all of our efforts, why cannot we see more happening, and why is the council prepared to risk another court action if it ignores its own adopted SDP? After the election, we have a newly invigorated council. Let's see it really do something to make Silver Hill shine." And that was from Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
The next letter is from Eileen Berry, and it's on the subject of the golf course. "Sir, I know this is not going to help because the decision has probably already been made for South Winchester Golf Course to be developed for housing. It would seem to me that no matter how many people are against this development within the Green Belt, indeed a beautiful part of the Green Belt between Winchester and Hursley, of all the places that could have been considered, it's unbelievable that this might be allowed. When we think of all the other developments that have come forward, whether it be 10, 20 or 2, it is going on all the time. As we well know, Kings Barton has been allotted for 2,000 houses, of which so far only 400 have been built. We were told that actually we'd filled our allocation. But here we are, another big development. May I say I know this particular golf course very well because two of my family were founder members. For years, a lot of the membership were saying, of course, they were allowed to build the cabins only for hire. Everyone knew the writing was on the wall because it was well realised that the ownership of the golf course was also interested in development. So it wasn't a question of how, it was a question of when. Let's be honest, the environmental agencies, the Green Friends of the Earth, countryside conservation people, none of it. No protest against this development made any difference. Which makes me wonder what powers the City Council and Planning Department have. At this moment in time, developments just know how to get round all the protests. They seem to be able to manipulate any situation and come back time and time again until they get what they want. And that was from Eileen Berry of Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester. And there's a letter editor's note. For the record, no application for development has been made, and a legal covenant means the golf course will operate until at least 2026.
And this letter is from Robert Marshall on the subject of solar power. Sir, it is pleasing that Mr. Jones of the Winchester Action on Climate Change is delighted by the granting of permission for the solar farm at South Wanston, Chronicle, May 26th. I wonder if he has considered the following. Solar panels only work in sunlight. Where does the energy come from at night, particularly in the winter when demand is high? Covering agricultural land with solar panels, houses and other developments takes that land out of food production. This results in more food imports. Imported food comes via truck, planes and ships, which are environmentally bad. Is this wise? Can Mr. Jones be certain that imported food is produced and raised to UK standards? He describes South Wanston as low-grade land. Upon what basis does he reach this conclusion? Hampshire has fine agricultural land, and even low-grade land produces food and enhances the environment. Finally, where are these solar panels made? Is he certain that their production is environmentally sound and carbon neutral? There are better environmental ways of generating power. This from Robert Marshall, Houghton Road, Stockbridge.
The next letter is from Rosemary Poole and is titled Language School. Sir, I was delighted to see a new language school is to be opened in the town, and if, in the course of instruction, two simple English words might be rescued from the dust heap, no one would be more pleased than me. Years has become decades, and difficult has become challenging. Hoping that perhaps the BBC would come to the rescue has not been the case, and without exception, the BBC newsreaders have simply reinforced the new America speak. So that was from Rosemary Poole, St James's Villa, Winchester.
Phil Yates writes next about his former friend Chris Pyle. Sir, I was saddened to read of the passing of Christopher, or Chris, Pyle in last week's issue of the Hampshire Chronicle, May the 27th. I'd known Chris for a number of years. Among his many interests, he was a prominent member of the City of Winchester Trust, organising summer tours, and on one occasion conducting a tour of post boxes past and present of the city. He had a fascination for them, as well as being a great train spotter, travelling everywhere from Scotland to Cornwall, especially on steam trains. He even had a model railway running around his rear garden. On one occasion when visiting, he was proud to show off the railway, but all of a sudden he stopped the train and I said, "What's up, Chris?" He replied, "My tortoise is in the tunnel. I have to get him out before the train runs into him." He was a lovely man, always ready to stop and have a chat. He will be sadly missed by so many who knew him. And that was from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
This letter from Simon Lever is entitled Hospital Future. Sir, regarding the controversial plans to downgrade services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, I have not heard of anyone in favour of this ill-thought-out plan. Moving services to Basingstoke will negatively affect medical staff living in the Winchester area who would need then to commute. Patients would need to visit Basingstoke for treatment, and patients, visitors would find it challenging to travel to the exceptionally busy infrastructure of Basingstoke. Improved services to life for local people sounds a little Orwellian. Local for Winchester residents is not Basingstoke. A local hospital is essential for the health, well-being and peace of mind for those living in the Winchester area. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Winchester.
A letter from Roger Stevens on Future of BBC. Sir, so we should defund the BBC, A. Parker Chronicle Letters, May the 27th. Without the BBC, almost all our news would be provided by organisation owned by billionaires, mostly either foreign or resident abroad, and few, if any, UK taxpayers. Their motive for controlling our news sources is to shape public attitudes so that they remain and flourish as billionaires. They do not promote our interests except when it serves their own interests to do so. Then, as now, everyone uses Princess Di for their own ends. Today it is to bash the BBC. Back then, when Di was a much less popular, as opposed to newsworthy, figure than she is today, it was to sell stories about her to the press and to take sides. The fake bank statements purporting to show that people close to her were selling stories to the press. They were, but it was a different set of people to that shown on the fake statement. Di was not an innocent abroad at the time of the notorious interview. She had spent 15 years in the public eye and was totally media savvy. She relished the opportunity to dish the dirt on an unfaithful husband. Remember him. Why did the BBC rehire the perpetrator of this infamity in 2016 when the hierarchy must surely have known about the events of 1995? Context. In 2016, a big red bus was being driven around the country bearing the slogan that promised us another £350 million a week for the NHS if we voted for Brexit. Providing misleading statements in order to achieve an objective has become accepted in public life. In this last week, we have had a backwash from the Hillsborough disaster. Mr. Cummings describing the Coronation Street atmosphere at 10 Downing Street. A page mysteriously missing from a government pandemic report, which may well have cost lives. And whitewash splashed over the PM's wallpaper spending. If the BBC is to be executed, the following criteria should be applied to the would-be executioners. He that is without a sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. That's from John's Gospel, chapter 8, verse 7. And that letter was from Roger Stevens, Clift Way, Compton.
And John Miller's letter is rather a response to that. It's entitled Future of the BBC. Sir, I read the letter by A. Parker, Mr. or Ms., with growing disbelief in the Chronicle last week. The plea to remove the BBC's licence fee was grotesquely undemocratic and would destroy the existence of one of the glories of our culture. As an ex-BBC producer who has often filmed abroad, I know how much other countries envy us for its artistic contribution. Mr. Bashir's deceitful approach to Princess Diana should not outweigh our appreciation of everything else the BBC brings to our lives. It was bad enough to read Parker's letter once, but to see it reproduced a second time on the next page made me heave with disgust. John Miller, Bishop Sutton Road, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
And this letter from Emma Mitchell concerning another event in Winchester, Mini Boomtown. Sir, I think it is a great shame that Boomtown this year will not be happening. So many artists, musicians, set designers, caterers and stall holders, mostly self-employed, who have lost so much due to COVID already, would endure another summer of hardship. Our youth, who have been so supportive of the government's restrictions, have made huge sacrifices to keep us oldies safe. Boomtown would have been a well-earned reward and something for them to look forward to. I am in my 50s and have visited Boomtown every year. What really makes me happy is how lovely and friendly everyone is. Over 5 days with excited people jostling for space near the stage, queuing by the loos, getting hot and wet with rain, tired and footsore. I have not witnessed one bad word, shove, scowl, shout or insolence. But I have experienced and heard of so many random acts of kindness and so much laughter and fun. It is a real tonic for all ages to enjoy. I think festivals such as Boomtown truly bring us all together, celebrate diversity, bring out the best in us, and share the love, joy and peace that we all so need and that our younger generation know how to give. We should be proud to have such a vibrant, creative, cool and colourful festival on our doorstep. I have lived within half a mile of the festival and noticed very little disruption in the last 5 years and witnessed the meticulous clean-up and the site returning to idyllic countryside shortly after. It is thoughtless and mean-spirited to deny our young people this opportunity in the future by objecting to the planning application. We should be so proud to give so much happiness to so many people and to support the talented artists, musicians and creative people in our community. It is such a huge event to organise, so they need to be able to plan ahead. Please support the Matterley Bowl planning application, that is SDNP/21/00290/FUL. This letter from Emma Mitchell, Lower Chilland Lane, Martyrworthy.
That concludes the letters. We next have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person. So the editorial comment. Highways England plans for M3 A34. Experience has shown that if you build new roads, they quickly get used more. When the missing link of the M3 through Twyford Down was completed in the mid-1990s, many people pointed out that in time the M3 A34 interchange would become congested. And so it proved. Spending £100 million on it will simply create future congestion elsewhere, probably on the Eastern Lane and East Winchester area. Much more effort should be spent on thinking of ways to reduce traffic to save ourselves having to find further batches of £100 million. We seem to be slipping back to the pre-1990s view that spending money on infrastructure is the answer. Having said that, it is highly unlikely that the latest Highways England plan can be stopped at this relatively late stage. The agency says it has tweaked the plans to make it safer after opponents pointed out the dangers of traffic on the new northbound A34 having to cross 3 lanes of high-speed traffic to reach the A33. Traffic currently crosses 2 lanes, but from a standing start at the roundabout. It will be interesting to know what the safety tweaks are.
Flick Drummond, who is MP for Meon Valley, writes the letter from Westminster. The UK's COVID vaccination drive continues to protect the nation as fears over the Indian COVID variant and a third wave start to circulate. We are right to be cautious about these emerging threats, but we are not in the same place as we were when the second wave struck. The vaccines work, and now 25 million have had both jabs and so are fully protected. The over 30s have been called forward for their first jab, and the government is looking to have all over 50s given their second jab by the 21st of June. This should mean the final part of the roadmap can be activated. The UK as a whole is also on course to have everyone given at least one jab by the 31st of July. This is a tremendous achievement, and the real-world data shows these jabs break the link between infection and serious illness or hospitalisation. Of course, things can change, but this vaccine programme and the high number of people taking up the vaccine puts us in a good place. It needs to be said that the vast majority in hospitals in the Indian variant hotspots like Bolton were offered the jab but declined it. I need say no more. The Environment Bill took centre stage in Parliament last week, and I will be supporting it. It's a good piece of legislation with wide-ranging targets, new bodies and schemes to help our wildlife, biodiversity and improve air and water quality. I spoke in Parliament to make the case for more in the bill to be about soil. Nationally, over 80% of our soil is dead. If we're to protect our environment and be agriculturally productive, more needs to be done to protect soil like our chalkland downland here in Hampshire. The government's £2 billion kickstart initiative is now coming online. Already, 200,000 kickstart placements have been approved in England and Wales. It will help young people aged 16 to 24 on universal credit and in danger of long-term unemployment, and already 20,000 are in a job. This number will grow over the summer. Young people have been hit hard by the pandemic, and this scheme is offering support to them and to employers to give them work placements. It means a wage and work experience, and it is the right way to help this age group. I didn't watch Dominic Cummings' performance last week in Parliament. I was dealing with correspondence and preparing my environment speech bill at the time. I know the joint committee he attended will be holding other hearings before it produces its report, and I will wait for the full picture to become clearer. There will also be a full independent inquiry into the response to COVID starting early next year. That important lessons need to be learnt is very clear to everyone. However, that will be achieved by a thorough examination of the facts, not by the opinions of one man. Finally, I was very proud to see HMS Queen Elizabeth set sail at the head of a carrier strike group on a six-month deployment to the Indo-Pacific region that will visit 40 countries. This is a great way for the UK to project its power and influence in an important part of the world. I wish all personnel a safe journey. And that was Flick Drummond, MP for Meon Valley.
And this is entitled Learning to Talk Like a Child by George Hayter. We British have always felt sympathy for foreigners trying to learn our language. English is known for its huge vocabulary and endless irregularities, like the K in knife and built instead of builded. I'm beginning to suspect that the situation is the reverse. Rather than being more difficult than other languages, English is easier. Our grammar is simple. Foreigners are lucky. We English suffer far more when trying to mimic the way they talk. I explain to everyone that this is why I failed French O-level. Ambition undimmed, I am now trying to learn Italian, a slightly rare language which I could find among the options at only two Winchester schools. I want to speak Italian because I plan to spend 3 months in Rome next year. It sounds charming, even beautiful. But the trouble is that Italian is clearly designed to overwhelm the brain. You have to anticipate whether a noun you are about to say is going to be masculine or feminine, because words before and after the noun have to match its gender. Conjugating Italian verbs requires even more brain cells. Our English word have has three other conjugations: has, having, and had. The Italian equivalent of have is avere, and I hope that's right, which has more than 25. Tricky recalling that lot. Some sound nothing like avere. They range from aviano to ebi to hai. And again, I hope that I got that right. For any non-speaker constructing their first English sentences, there is nothing to delay them. Admittedly, the K in knife and built instead of builded are hurdles, but these are matters of detail and need bother only advanced students of English. How often do built or knife crop up in your conversation? Learning a foreign language may be like trying to walk up a cliff, but that isn't stopping me. My intention is to approach fluency in Italian by using a free language website. Duolingo asks you to translate phrases and sentences of increasing complexity, showing you the words you have got wrong. If you answer the questions correctly, it asks you more difficult ones, gradually introducing advanced grammar and wider vocabulary. So each question is ideal for your degree of proficiency so far. You can learn as fast as you can type, and you are scored to make it like a game. Some of the questions in Italian are posed by a voice, so you learn to understand the language both written and spoken. The funny thing is, I have found it best not to think too hard about the answers. Just type in your hunch, and there's a fair chance it will be right. That is the carefree way that a child learns to talk. Toddlers say any old thing and steadily learn from their mistakes. The website method works in the same informal way, without any need to chant lists of words or verb conjugations. You learn what sounds right, largely subconsciously. I have labelled our furniture and crockery with the Italian for table, spoon and so forth, in a bid to boost my vocabulary, and I've even bought a textbook. Neither method has taught me much. After 5 weeks using it, Duolingo's teaching seems 1,000 times more powerful. To measure progress, I set myself a mock exam. I googled a 45-minute 2019 GCSE Italian written exam paper and then used its marking guide. I got 53%. Not bad for 5 weeks, even if I have been on Duolingo for at least 2 hours nearly every day. I never thought I could be fluent in another language, but now I think anyone can get at least halfway there just by using a good computer course. You have to be relentless, though. Persistence is key, and 7 days a week is best. These days, mastering a language is much easier, but success is still mostly a function of wanting it enough.
There are no special announcements this week. Just to remind you that sunrise present time is just before 5 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is about 9:15 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first one is entitled Police Break Up Another Illegal Horse and Trap Race. An illegal horse and trap race was broken up by police on the A33 near Micheldever. Crowds had returned to the scene of an illegal horse and trap race held earlier this month on Sunday morning. But while police allowed the previous event to go ahead, this time officers from Hampshire's Police and Roads Unit broke up the proceedings. Now officers say an investigation into the offences committed has been launched. A spokesman said, "On routine patrol this morning, we came across a number of vehicles, including horse and traps, obstructing the free flow of traffic on the A33 between Winchester and Basingstoke. The event was stopped, and there will be an investigation into the offences committed." Horse and trap racing, also known as harness racing, is a type of horse racing in which the animals pull a two-wheeled cart behind them, occupied by a driver. Spectators bet on the outcome of the races. The first event ran on the 1st of May, and the second, with nearby residents saying they saw attendees arriving from 6:30 in the morning, in each morning. Members of the public at the time questioned why the police didn't stop the event from taking place. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary defended its action, saying, "Whilst at times the road was closed entirely, for the majority of the time, and when safe to do so, we were able to partially open the road to allow traffic through. This type of action is not exclusive to this event. As with any large gatherings we have seen across the country this past year, policing always has to balance whether allowing an event to happen, even if illegal, is safer than the risks of shutting it down. However, they added that this is an illegal sporting event and we do not support or facilitate it, despite the primary focus having to be on safety. Following the last event, Hampshire's new Police and Crime Commissioner said that a robust management plan is needed to stop future illegal horse racing events.
And this is entitled Future of Hospital in the Spotlight. An indication of what the future of Winchester Hospital could look like has been hinted at by health bosses. Plans are being drawn up for a new hospital in or near Basingstoke, which would serve Mid and North Hampshire. Residents were given the opportunity to ask questions of those behind the Hampshire Together programme during a meeting organised by MP Steve Bryan last week. Hampshire Hospital's chief executive, Alex Whitfield, said, "We have a couple of different options for the site of the new build, one at Junction 7 of the M3 and one at the current Basingstoke site. And we have some really exciting plans for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. This would be our main local hospital under these plans. And you have lots of the services that you know and love, but there is also a potential for planned surgical services." She continued, "I absolutely want to assure that investment in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is part of Hampshire Together. We are completely committed to the Royal Hampshire and really happy to take that conversation further." Ms. Whitfield indicated that services such as diagnostics, MRIs and CTs will remain at Winchester Hospital even when the new hospital is built. Health bosses were asked by resident Tessa Tulloch about the future of the city's A&E department, which is currently the specialist local centre for strokes. Ms. Whitfield said, under all of our proposals and options, a child who has hurt their finger on a football pitch would still be able to go to the Royal Hampshire, and minor injury type services in any proposal would still be treated there, along with many minor illnesses. The problem is, where do the ambulances take you? The options that we will talk to the public about will have different scenarios about where the ambulances might be taking you. It is not yet clear what services could be lost once a plan for the new hospital has been approved, but Mr. Bryan urged health chiefs to be upfront with residents. He said, "Yes, I'm pleased. Who wouldn't be pleased to have a brand new hospital serving his constituents? But there is going to be a rub to that. You are not going to have all the same services in Basingstoke and Winchester. A new hospital in between the two and a major trauma centre in Southampton, and there is going to be a trade-off between them. I expect the clinicians to own that, and I expect them to be 100% upfront with us as to what we trade in order to what we gain."
No COVID deaths have been reported in the Winchester district for 91 days as of Tuesday the 1st of June. Nationally on Tuesday, no deaths were reported for the first time since the start of the pandemic in March 2020. In the Hampshire Hospitals area that includes the hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, there have been no reported deaths for 39 days. Across the district, there is only one place with more than two cases in the last 7 days, and that is Whiteley, Knowle and Wickham, which has seen four cases up to in the 7 days to May the 27th, the most recent day for which figures are available. No Winchester schools are affected, and only 14 in Hampshire, with eight of them in the northeast of the county. But there has been a slight increase in COVID cases across the district, with 11 in the 7 days to May the 27th, up eight, an increase of 267%. But that I think that's slightly misleading. I think it's just we say it's a slight increase.
vintage buses to run in the city once again. The famous vintage bus running day is back in Winchester. On Sunday, September the 12th, Friends of King Alfred's buses will be bringing its fleet to the city. There'll be also a pop-up display the day before. Following a period of limited activity due to lockdown, the group confirms its plans for the weekend of Winchester Heritage Open Days. On Saturday, there'll be a display of rare local and historic buses and coaches. This will be at the Cattle Market car park in Worthy Lane, Winchester, between 12 noon and 5 p.m, and will consist of up to 12 vehicles, ranging from 1931 to 1970. Free vintage bus journeys will operate half-hourly between the Broadway and the Cattle Market. Also, there may be a special visitor, a vehicle celebrating its 100th anniversary as a bus, originally used to operate as a service between Uslesbury and Winchester. On Sunday, there'll be a vintage bus running day between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. based on the Broadway. Further details will be announced nearer the weekend.
British Airways' first flight from Southampton, though it should be noted that this article was written before the recent changes on the green list, but it still is an important progress. British Airways has taken to the skies from Southampton Airport for the first time. Last week, British Airways' first flight from Southampton, BA2927, took off bound for Faro. This is said to be the first flight in an exciting new schedule for the airline from the airport in Eastleigh. Under a new agreement with Southampton Airport, British Airways is set to operate up to 18 flights each weekend to 12 locations, including Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, France and Germany, COVID permitting, of course. At Southampton Airport yesterday, Rachel Riley, BA's City Flyers Head of Commercial, said, "As we welcome more customers back on board, the launch of today's operation from Southampton is an exciting extension of our service. This is a special day for many people. Families have been separated from loved ones overseas, businesses have suffered, and we know that our customers haven't been able to take the breaks abroad that they've wanted." Matt Hazelwood, Group Commercial Director at AGS Airports Limited, added that it was a fantastic day for Southampton. "We are absolutely thrilled to see Faro, the first of BA City Flyers' 12 destinations from Southampton, take to the skies today, and we are sure the route will prove extremely popular this summer. The new service is the start of filling the gap caused by the collapse of Flybe." Southampton Airport bosses said it is facing the worst crisis the aviation industry has ever encountered.
New City Council flats approved. It is the biggest estate of high-rise in the district, high-rise flats in the district, and it is about to get bigger. Plans to build two new blocks at Winnall Flats have been approved by Winchester City Council's planning committee. They will offer 76 new homes with 32 shared ownership properties in one five-storey block split into 18 two-bedroom apartments and 14 one-bedroom units. In the second block, also five stories, there will be 41 sub-market one-bedroom units to rent. The plans submitted by Debbie Rhodes, Housing Development and Strategy Manager at Winchester City Council, saw 15 objections. Speaking at the committee on May the 26th, Winnall Flats resident Brian Pitt said, "What my greatest worry is that is, although the suggestions put forward aren't all bad and I'm not against affordable housing, is it will become an annex for the problems that are already happening in the existing blocks. I bought a flat and over the past years, I've seen deterioration of the present four blocks increase. I know money is short, but the blocks were originally designed for married couples with no kids, no pets, and the style of flats were for a certain age and had security. It's just the standards have deteriorated. I wish it wouldn't have been kept as it was, some sort of sheltered housing." The proposals also include three two-storey dwelling houses to the east of the site, all two bedrooms. Former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davies said he was concerned the estate was becoming overcrowded. He said, "You're piling flats into an area with the tallest flats in the district. The idea seems to be abandoning any sort, other sort of development in the area, and I can't understand why it has all been concentrated there." But speaking on behalf of the supporters of the scheme, an agent said it would benefit new and existing residents. The project has been worked on for 4 years with the council's new homes team to deliver much needed affordable housing, and it will benefit existing and new residents in terms of high quality landscaping and amenities across the site. Following a detailed site analysis, it was found the best spaces and views into the site are dominated by roads and car parking. Many nice spaces are overshadowed by the existing blocks. The proposals make several key moves to improve the area. Pedestrian routes will also be improved by the scheme. The plans were granted unanimously by the 8 planning committee councillors, subject to a handful of conditions which can be viewed on the City Council's planning portal.
Push for crossing at school. Campaigners have renewed their pleas over an accident waiting to happen outside an Alsford school. Every day, hundreds of pupils cross the avenue at the start and end of the day to attend Perrin Secondary. There have been many attempts in recent years, including a resolution from the new Alsford Town Council, to install a crossing at the site, but no action has been taken. So Winchester MP Steve Bryan and newly elected City Councillor Fiona Isaacs brought Councillor Robert Humby of Hampshire County Council to see the situation for himself. Mr. Bryan, who's been a parent at the school himself this year, said, "There have been calls from parents and teachers for some time to make this crossing point safer, but things are really coming to a head as things get much busier on the roads, and in particular as a new bus contract comes into force from September. We're extremely grateful to Councillor Humby for visiting Alsford and have agreed to work together with the school on a series of measures around the future bus contract and, yes, a crossing. Councillors have buzzed around this subject for too long without actually changing anything. Now is the time for action because the avenue is an accident waiting to happen." Parent Wendy Osborne added, "This is really a dangerous crossing point on the avenue. Many children use it on a daily basis, and without a safe crossing, it is only a matter of time before a child is run over."
Centre opens on sunny weekend. Winchester Sport and Leisure Park is open, and local residents are enjoying it. The new facility in Bar End welcomed users for the first time on Saturday the 29th of May in fine weather. Since then, badminton has been played, weights have been lifted and lengths have been swum. Jason Bennett, 28, of Winnell, said, "It looks good and it feels even better. The gym is impressive and the pool is huge, well worth the wait." Phil Davies, who went for his first dip on the opening day, said, "Very well organised and simple to use. It was such a pleasure to get back into the water again." Natalie Clark of Highcliffe added, "Everything is perfect. I was expecting good things, but I've been blown away. It even smells good inside. The aircon is so good as well." Sessions at the new centre can be booked online or via the app.
The trust behind Winchester Hospital is running an investigation after a mother died in childbirth. As previously reported on March the 13th, Bishop Waltham's mother of two, Lucy Howell, passed away at just 32 years old. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, confirmed that the proper procedures are being followed. She said, "Deaths in childbirth are rare, but sadly can still occur. Steps are in place to ensure a full investigation takes place in these instances in line with national guidelines, and any and all learnings are shared with the team and quickly put into practice. We have a dedicated team of bereavement midwives who are there to offer specialist support to bereaved relatives at what is an incredibly difficult time, and our thoughts are with the family involved. Lucy's husband Matt is raising money to install a memorial at Winnall Moors Nature Reserve in Winchester.
Mystery buyer secures open space in suburb. Pockets of land in Badger Farm, including the Davis Kickabout, have been sold, but not to the parish council as it had hoped. The community had been fundraising to buy the plots, which went for auction following the liquidation of building company Davis Development. But the land has instead been snatched up by an unknown buyer for an undisclosed sum. A spokesman for the parish council said, "The council are disappointed that we weren't successful today in purchasing the land known as Davis Kickabout, along with surrounding pockets of land. We don't know who purchased the land and what plans they may have, but we as a parish council intend to work very closely with Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council to preserve this land for the future recreational use of our residents. We will put updates on our website and Facebook page as we know more." A crowdfunding campaign was launched by the Badger Farm Residents Community Association to raise the estimated price of £5,000. The association with the parish council has made an application for village green status to the county council, but it will be months before a decision is made. It says it's investigating whether the original title deeds for the area from the 1980s, when Badger Farm was built, would provide protection. A note of this investigation has been placed with the land registry, which may deter some developers. County Councillor Brian Lamming said, "The land is designated as open space and is well used by everyone. This is a great example of the community working together for the benefit of all. The City Council is very supportive of this crowdfunding initiative and by the Residents Association and all their efforts to help secure the future of this."
Pupils spend a whole day playing music. Whilst most people ate, slept and completed their daily activities, they were playing music throughout. More than 65 pupils and 20 teachers from Winchester College participated in a 24-hour music festival, fundraising for the NSPCC, Stay at School Nepal, and local charity Winchester Young Carers. So far, the event has raised over £5,000. The festival began at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May the 22nd, and continued non-stop through the night until Sunday at 2 p.m. Performances showcased a range of musical talents from all age groups across diverse genres, from classical to jazz, rock to rap. Viewers enjoyed a rich variety of sounds, which heard the likes of Sergei Rachmaninoff, followed by contemporary artists such as Taylor Swift. After the event, 17-year-old Thomas Sharrock, who led the team, said, "The nicest thing about organising this event was being able to feel immersed in the school community again. We have worked very closely together, and needless to say, our plans were constantly changing, even seconds before the next performer went on. Despite performing for such a long time, the standard was extremely high. It has been very heartwarming to see everyone pull together and to receive so much support for this endeavour and the charities we are trying to help. The whole school community was involved in the event." Natural history teacher Dan Wright, who has recently joined the school from Nepal, opened the festival with the Nepali national anthem. 20 spectators were allowed in at any time.
Hat Fair announces lineup. Details of this year's Hat Fair Outdoor Arts Festival have been released by the organisers. Play to the Crowd have announced the lineup for the 2021 event, due to take place from Friday the 2nd of July to Sunday the 4th of July. Due to the ongoing pandemic, the annual event will take a different format to previous years, with all 3 days taking place in the same adjacent venues, North Walls Recreation Ground and the Winchester School of Art car park, close to the Winchester City Centre, rather than throughout the city. This allows audience numbers to be controlled to provide a safe and secure festival. Along with top names, the festival also provides a platform for local artists, musicians, dancers and talent, with performance interspersed throughout the weekend. The Friday session on the North Walls Recreation Ground site has a more local community-focused programme and features the Top Hat competition, a competition for University of Winchester's performance students and graduates to compete to win mentoring with Andrew Loretto, the Hat Fair director. This year, hatters will be paid a fee from the ticket money raised instead of audiences throwing money into hats. For more information and to book tickets, visit hatfair.co.uk.
Scouts seek more volunteers. The Scouts have launched a new campaign to recruit over 1,000 volunteers in Hampshire. Youth members in the county have fallen by 18% over the past year, from 19,000 in 2020 to 15,600. Adult volunteer numbers in Hampshire are also down, from 6,600 to 6,000. This drop follows a sustained period of growth where total membership rose by nearly 9,300 between 2006 and 2020 across the county. The Good For You campaign aims to help build back better and empower the COVID generation when they need it most. To do this, Scouts need more adults to step up and volunteer to lead young people. Martin Mackey, lead volunteer for Hampshire, said, "Despite Scouting shifting to online, this could not replace the fantastic adventure and challenge that young people gain from meeting up, both indoors and outdoors. Added to that are the many pressures that people have and continue to experience as we emerge from this pandemic. It has meant young people have lost out on so much in the past year, and our membership numbers show how many were unable to continue with Scouts due to lockdown. Now that we have returned to proper Scouting, although with some COVID-19 restrictions still in place, the good news is that we are seeing young people coming back and in large numbers. So we need more people to help us ensure young people can meet friends, have fun, and fulfil their potential by learning skills for life. That is why today we are calling on people to volunteer with us. Volunteering is good for communities, good for young people, and good for you."
£10 million to cut post-COVID waiting lists. A total of £10 million funding has been announced to help cut NHS waiting lists in Hampshire. NHS England has announced that funding will help the county recover from the pandemic as it looks to cut waiting lists. The funding is part of a £160 million investment across the country and comes after figures revealed in April that the number of people in England waiting to begin hospital treatment had risen to a record high. Some 4.7 million people were waiting to start treatment at the end of February, the highest figure since records began in August 2007. But now the funding is set to be used to trial virtual wards, 3D eye scanners and at-home antibiotic kits as part of the effort to tackle the lengthy waiting lists. Derek Sanderman, Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care System, said, "We are delighted that Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has been selected to receive £10 million of additional funding to tackle waiting lists and further reduce waiting times for planned care for patients. Dedicated teams have maintained high levels of planned care in the past months, despite a significant increase in patients with COVID-19 in hospital during the second peak of the pandemic, which had a knock-on effect on non-urgent care. This additional funding allows us to test new, innovative ways of creating additional capacity for planned care and will help ensure that no patient waits any longer than they have to. Tens of thousands of patients in the trial areas will be part of the initiatives, including a high-volume cataract service, one-stop testing facilities, and pop-up clinics. It has not yet been announced if these types of trials will take place in Hampshire. Amanda Pritchard, NHS Chief Operating Officer, said, "This additional support will help us create a blueprint for continuing that progress over summer."
City Centre Bank closes its doors. A bank in Winchester city centre has closed its doors for the last time. TSB in the High Street is now permanently shut, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters has confirmed. It has offered advice to customers. A spokesman said, "This will doubtless be disappointing to TSB's customers in Winchester. However, alternative banking provision is available to local residents at post office branches nearby." The nearest post offices to the closing TSB Bank Winchester branch are Winchester Post Office, 110 High Street, that's the one in Smiths; Upper High Street Post Office, 3 to 4 Upper High Street; Stony Lane and Stony Lane Post Office, 61 to 65 Stony Lane. Each of these branches offers banking services including deposits, free cash withdrawals and balance checks, as well as offering face-to-face access to government services, bill payment, foreign currency, travel insurance and, of course, postal services. There are currently 2,000 free-to-use ATMs installed across the UK post office network also. TSB Bank began operating as a separate business within Lloyds Banking Group in 2013. National Federation of Sub-Postmasters spokesman said, "Post offices are proving vital to retaining people's and businesses' access to cash as banks continue to desert the high street in order to cut costs and increase their profits. Every post office plays a vital role within the heart of a local community. Post offices provide a reliable and essential service which has continued at a high standard across the whole of the UK throughout the pandemic."
Classrooms left empty as pupils learn from nature. The classrooms at Stanmore Primary School in Winchester were empty on Outdoor Learning Day. Working collaboratively in their house teams within their class bubbles, the pupils spent their time outside. Teacher Angela Hawkins said they enjoyed a stimulating day full of outdoor learning tasks, including making miniature village dens, hanging art constructed out of natural materials, and creating giant symmetrical bugs. The showery weather didn't dampen their enthusiasm for the outdoor learning tasks, and all the children went home tired but very happy. And there's a photograph of half a dozen children looking quite pleased with themselves, and they seem to have made a sort of screen, which is a kind of washing line of string with lots of dangly bits of twigs hanging down from it.
And this from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, entitled "The Latest Hendog Memorial." That's Hendog, H-E-N-D-O-G. The artist responsible for murals across Winchester has created a new piece, this time encouraging support for local independent businesses. The latest artwork by Hendog appeared at the High Street end of St Thomas Street. It shows a child playing with multicoloured building blocks constructing a wall. A post on Hendog's Instagram said, "A city that was built on dreams." In my lifetime, there has never been a more important time to support a local independent businesses. A market controlled by few is no good for anyone. Let's keep the dream alive. It is the fifth mural from the artist, who has been dubbed the Winchester Banksy, which has sprung up in the city this year. Their last piece was created as a memorial for local musician Simon Den Goodwin. It was painted on a wall in the garden of the Railway Inn on St Paul's Hill. Before that, Eastleigh-based Hen Dog's artwork appeared on the Community Food Pantry at Unit 12 in Winnell and at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Their first mural this year was on a wall near to the Handlebar Cafe, just off Garnier Road in St Cross. The pictures get a mixed response, from praise to criticism, as a second-rate Banksy. Banksy being, of course, the anonymous Bristol-based graffiti artist.
Right, well, on that rather fun item, that concludes our extracts from the week. There was a photograph accompanying that item in the paper. So it looks fun. So if you are at the end of the high street end of St Thomas Street, it's probably worth having a look at this. I think the word is installation. Anyway, our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne and Brew and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Peter Walker. Goodbye.
Sorry, Peter Walker. Sorry, I was given the name from last time. Peter Walker. Sorry, apologies, Peter. Goodbye from here. And it's goodbye from your somewhat not very efficient presenter, John Parker. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put the address label inside the envelope.